as we do realize that our well-being does impact everything in our life, our health, our purpose and drive in life, our relationships, our finances, successes, our entire world. And definitely, I see well-being as the center, the core. And if I have my well-being intact, it then ripples out to all domains of my life, to my physical, to my psychological, and my social, my spiritual circles. And so let us explore this topic today then. The topic, well-being from inside out. And if you have to look at the word well-being, according to the Oxford Dictionary, it's defined as a feeling of comfort, health, and happiness. And if you look at the World Health Organization definition of health, health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease. And in South Africa, we would also add cultural and existential well-being. And so that is what health is, not just the physical aspects of health that is important, but also the psychological or the mental and the social and the cultural and existential aspects of care that add to a healthy being. And now there are many prestigious medical universities across the world, like Stanford Medical University, that study mind-body medicine. And they have large departments that have created many studies to deeply understand the power of thoughts and emotions to influence physical health. And Hippocrates, one of the known fathers of medicine, also wrote, "The natural healing force within each one of us is the greatest force in getting well." So the natural healing force within each one of us is the greatest force in getting well. It's not that I then reject biomedical models of health, but together with biomedical models of health, I then incorporate a healthy mind, a powerful mind, and stable emotions that can create a total well-being, a complete state of health. In sharing about this, I was remembering, a circumstance early on in medicine. It must have been maybe 17 years ago. I was sitting in a clinic seeing patients, and it was a busy clinic, and I had my files on my desk. And as this patient peeked her head into the room, she said a chirpy hello. And as she walked in and she started to speak and move and sit down, I immediately felt, wow, she reminds me of somebody very close to me. And as we began to engage in a conversation, I could see that, wow, she has the similar thinking patterns to this individual that she reminded me of. So her bodily physique, her movement, her chirpy nature, her voice, her demeanor, everything reminded me of this other individual. And then when I opened the file to discover her background of illness, can you believe what I find? I find that she had the same disease profile of this individual that she reminded me of. And then as I drove home that day, I just thought to myself, wow, I am really my creation. Everything, even the diseases I have, to what extent are they influenced by who I am? And for me, it was the beginning of a journey of beginning to understand well-being more deeply and how important it is to know myself and the energy I'm pumping out into this body that is creating the being that I am projected in this world. And so quite a profound impact of that one little experience in my life, you know, that everything I am, I create, and it starts within. And so what is mind-body medicine? Whilst Eastern traditions have acknowledged the correlation between the body and the mind, Western traditions of medicine had separated the body from the mind and felt they were two separate entities that had no impact on each other until studies were done to illustrate otherwise. And so there were many studies done. And just to share a few with you, in 1964, a psychiatrist, George Solomon, studied rheumatoid arthritis, and he noticed that patients' rheumatoid arthritis flared up when they were depressed. And so he began to study this, and he discovered that there is the impact of emotions on inflammation, because rheumatoid arthritis is an inflammatory condition. And there is that impact of emotions on the immune system in general. And from this began the field called psychoneuroimmunology. So psychology, neurology, and immunology combined. And then in the 1960s and the early 70s, a physician named Herbert Benson also coined the term relaxation response. And he studied how meditation actually lowered blood pressure. And then in 1975, a psychologist, Robert Adder, showed that mental and emotional stress affects the immune system. And I remember meeting a nurse at a retreat in the US of A, and she was sharing how she's done a study which showed that, you know, if somebody was not adequately prepared for surgery with the proper psychotherapy and counseling, that stress then post-surgery delayed the wound healing because the stress lowered the immunity. And so the importance of that whole support of the patient. Studies also done on HIV showed that those who had faith and compassion towards others and a sense of peace and were religious and had a deep faith, they lived longer than those that did not have this in their favor. And then in 1989, a study by David Spiegel of Stanford University also demonstrated the power of a healthy mind on ladies with breast cancer. They had a randomized control trial, and they had women with late stage breast cancer, those that received chemotherapy and counseling in support sessions versus those who did not receive those. And in that study with these 86 women, they showed that those who were supported in these support groups then lived twice as long as the women who did not. And there was also a similar study in 1999, which showed that people with breast cancer who had a feeling of helplessness and hopelessness had an associated lesser chance of survival. And many, many more studies showing meditation and its effects on mood and symptoms in people with blood pressure, cancer, irritable bowel syndrome, and how such techniques improved the quality of life. And as I was sharing earlier in the chat, you know, I've also studied the impact of psycho-existential distress on individuals with advanced cancer and those who had a lot of psycho-existential distress showed greater suffering, reduced dignity, reduced will to live, and increased depression, anxiety, and shortened lifespans. And I know in my years also, you know, studying medicine and working in medicine, it was interesting that there are studies that show a correlation between depression and cardiac failure. And so when I heard this, I thought, oh my goodness, you know, can you imagine those with a broken heart going through depression actually manifest with cardiac failure? And so, and you know, there's immense studies that show the impact of mind-body medicine and the mind and our thoughts and our emotions on our body. And so even studies on stress show that stress increases sugar levels, and with that diabetes. Bristol University had shown that, you know, people with higher sugar levels then had accelerated brain cell atrophy and early dementia. And many, many studies on coronary artery disease showing the impact of meditation and relaxation and healthy lifestyle on reducing the plaque in coronary artery disease. And I'm sure you've also heard of many individuals with no predisposition to heart attacks, having heart attacks at an early age due to numerous stressors. Also, if you look at chronic pain management, the management is antidepressants. And so if one needs an antidepressant to help with chronic pain, to what extent is the pain from social pain or from psychological pain rather than just physical pain, possibly even from spiritual pain? And so there is an understanding that there is such a thing as total pain, and pain is not just physical. It can result from these other aspects of pain. And many of us, you know, may have, you know, stressed shoulders and maybe struggle to sleep and bowel or gut health that is not the best, either constipation or irritable bowel syndrome. And these are all signs of the being out of balance. So signs that I need to look at my well-being and pay attention to it. And even in my 20 years, you know, in the practice of medicine, I've seen many individuals with autoimmune illnesses and seen how when they were stressors, their autoimmune illnesses would flare up. And when they were having a feeling of wellness, their autoimmune illnesses were stable. I remember I had a patient with an autoimmune illness called immune thrombocytopuric purpura, and she had very low platelets. And despite all the medication that one gave her, her platelets continued to drop and drop and drop. And we saw her week after week, and she refused to be admitted. And then eventually I asked her, what is happening? And then in tears, she confided in me, saying that, you know, she was abused and raped as a child. And when she had recently told her husband of the experience, he scorned her and he made her feel very bad about herself, blaming her for the experience. And she had a deep sense of self-loathing, and that self-loathing, you know, exacerbated her condition, because autoimmune illness is my body creating antibodies to kill my own cells. And so to what extent, you know, can I look at my whole well-being and look at working on being well from inside out? Because definitely my physical health depends on my inner well-being, on my mental health, my psychological health, my social health, my spiritual health. And so that is the definition of health, not just the physical health, but looking at the complete person. And so can I look at my complete person? So how does mind-body medicine work? Basically, when we are physically or emotionally stressed, our body releases stress hormones, that's adrenaline and cortisol. And these two hormones then are needed when I am in a flight or fight situation. But unfortunately, in current day, almost every moment of our day is filled with fright, and we're not feeling very emotionally stable to meet the challenge. And our body is then kicking out all these hormones, adrenaline and cortisol, which is causing our heart to beat fast, our breathing to be faster, for our liver to release hormones that would allow the sugar to rush into our bloodstream, to send blood to our muscles in our legs, and to shut down the circulation to our gut. And accordingly, then our sugar levels rise, our blood pressure rises, we have tension in our muscles because our muscles are ready to be in action. And we have reduced digestion and absorption in our gut. There's then insomnia because I'm on hyper alert, and muscle tension, ulcers or dyspepsia or discomfort in my stomach because it's not getting the adequate blood supply. And so I'm sure all of you have some of these difficulties and challenges in the body. And so the goal of mind-body techniques is to get the body and the mind to relax and to then reduce these levels of stress hormones in the body so that our immunity is better, our muscles are more relaxed, our gut gets the necessary blood supply, we don't then create so much sugar in our bloodstream and hypertension, etc. And those are only few of the symptoms that I am describing. And so to support mind-body medicine, there are many techniques that have been created and are studied. Some are biofeedback, cognitive behavioral therapy, relaxation techniques, deep breathing, muscle relaxation, mindfulness, hypnotherapy. And I'm sure some of you have explored a lot of that. And so working in the environments that I have for this time, you know, I wanted to share from my personal experience over the last 20 years, some of the methods and techniques that had supported my patients as I've journeyed with them in this field, and some of the techniques that have benefited them, and some of the techniques I use personally in my life. And so I'll share this with you in stories so that you can also appreciate and learn through those stories. So how do we optimize our physical, mental, and emotional health and well-being? And so let us start with the physical health. So how do I optimize my physical health and well-being? And so definitely, you know, look at, I see somebody in the chat had were asking many questions about physical health. So definitely to take care physically, like Aarti had mentioned, you know, lockdown has really allowed individuals to begin to create a plan for their physical health, be it exercise, healthy diet, drinking adequate water, getting enough sleep, grounding, walking in nature. So all of these aspects so essential, you know, looking at habits that would worsen my health and habits that would improve my physical health. So all of this is so important. But today I'd like to touch on another aspect of physical health, and that is to really understand that I am more than this body. And as one who is more than this body, you know, can I learn to be kind to my body? Because my body is such a valuable instrument. You know, the word human being tells us that I'm not just the body, but I'm this living being in this body. And as this living being, what type of energy am I flooding this body with? You know, every moment I am having thoughts. We have, you know, 60,000 to, I'm sure, 200,000 thoughts a day currently. And each one of those thoughts is an energy that is flooding this body with, be it sadness, irritation, stress, joy, love, peace, power. You know, how am I living every moment and every second of this day? You must have heard of Dr. Emoto. So he's a Japanese scientist who did studies on water. And he tested water, you know, under the microscope. And he first did the experiment of placing this water in a room and just having wonderful, peaceful, healthy, powerful, good thoughts towards that glass of water. And under the microscope, then those water molecules looked like beautiful crystals. And then that same glass of water, you know, was placed in an atmosphere where there were thoughts of anger and hate and negativity. And that same glass of water, you know, when frozen and sectioned, looked like sludge. And so same glass of water, but different thoughts being exposed to different thoughts, and after being sectioned and looked at under the microscope, one with healthy, beautiful thoughts looking like snowflakes, and with negative, angry, hateful thoughts, the water looked like sludge. And our body is made up of 70% water. And so what am I doing to my body? You know, can I, to optimize my physical health, can I pay attention to be kind to this body? Don't just use it and abuse it, but be kind, give it time out, go for a walk, eat healthy, you know, have peaceful thoughts while eating, not thinking about the next activity and swallowing that food so fast, so that you can get on with life. That body also deserves that kindness and respect. And I know for myself, for the last decade, you know, being a meditator, I begin my meditation just thanking each and every part of this body for doing a job well done, you know, because I feel often we forget to appreciate and value these tiny precious feet, these hands, you know, my entire body. If it were not for this body, how would I be able to then play my valuable part? And so to respect this body and to know that you are more than the body, and that the quality of the energy that you are is influencing the body. I just wanted to share a story with you. I remember, you know, my uncle was diagnosed with cancer, and he was diagnosed with stomach cancer the one day, and within 24 hours, he was admitted and he had surgery and his entire stomach was removed. And he found himself in ICU, and he just could not come to terms with what had happened. He was a strong builder, a man who was highly independent and functional and the one in charge, the man. And suddenly, within a day, he could not absorb properly. He could not digest properly. He was given this diagnosis, had an operation. And over the next year, you know, I would visit and try and explain why the doctors had to do what they had to do. And he would be so miserable and upset. And he would always ask me, why did they have to butcher me? And thereafter, he could not work and he could not digest well. And he felt more and more disillusioned and frail. And after a while, you know, since he was stable, I did not, you know, have time to visit. But my aunt had called me and said, Raksha, please visit. You know, your uncle is asking for you. And as I went to visit, you know, this time once again began our 1 hour conversation of why did they butcher me? And this time I thought nothing physical that I had explained, you know, is going to support him. And so I asked him, what are you afraid of? Do you think that because you're not the man that you were, that you do not exist, that you are not valuable, that you are not worthy? You know, I understand that you are more than your body. You are a peaceful and powerful soul. And I told him that I want you to tell yourself 8 times a day that you are a peaceful and powerful soul. And he asked my aunt to quickly write it on a piece of paper. And for the first time after a year and a half, I saw a glint of hope in his eyes. And as my aunt wrote that in the shaky cursive handwriting, thereafter, you know, he began to practice that. And I called 2 days later and my aunt says he's never been better in all of this time. And within that month, he passed away. And my cousin had called me, you know, it was around midnight and said, please come and see. We think dad has gone. And as I went to see, you know, and my uncle, there at his bedside was this shaky cursive writing, I am a peaceful and powerful soul. And as I spent time with the family, my aunt, about 2 hours later at 2 a.m., she came to me in the other room and she said, Raksha, you know, whatever you shared with him changed his entire experience of life in these last days. And so for me, it was what a beautiful, you know, emphasis on and validation that, you know, if I know that I'm more than my body, it gives me a sense of worth, a sense of courage and hope, and I can live a quality life. And so to understand that I am this untouchable spirit, the untouchable soul, I'm not just the human, but I'm the being in the human, and be that amazing being and flood the body and all your trillions of cells with the beautiful light and power of the being that you are. I know in my master's research on dignity, I had also done guided imagery on the untouchable spirit with a few patients. And one of my patients was a 30 plus year old male who had journeyed for 10 years with brain cancer. And when I walked into the home, his son was whimpering, you know, so sad in the lounge, and on the fridge was, I love you, Dad. And the patient was in bed, you know, so upset and angry. And as I tried to interview him, he barely whispered, and he was so upset, bed bound, and because he felt that he was losing the battle. And as I did the guided imagery on the intrinsic spirit, the intrinsic dignity of the untouchable spirit, his eyes came alight, and something happened, and I left. But when I returned the next week, he was walking and screaming and talking so loudly, whereas when I first met him, I could barely hear him. And I said, what happened? And he said, it's that thing you did with me. You know, it showed me all the crap, and I realized I was depressed, and I'm more than this, you know. And he said, I shared it with my wife, with my son, and it's made such a difference. And so once again, you know, physical well-being starts with knowing that the energy I hold within, the experience of wellness within, is influencing this body. And so stay well within and let that wellness permeate into your body. And I remember, you know, in my many experiences of teaching meditation to individuals, I remember a lady that started the meditation course, and she was covered from head to toe, so not a bit of her skin could be visible. She had severe psoriasis, and her skin would flake off wherever she sat. And as she did the meditation course, you know, by the end of it, she was wearing short sleeves, and she said, look at this, look at my arms. You know, now that I am meditating, my psoriasis has become less aggressive. And so many, many beautiful stories and examples of this. And then mental health, mental well-being. How can I optimize my mental well-being? And I've noticed that currently in the world, a deep feeling of loneliness is a new sickness that is emerging. And for me, mental well-being is such that the mind always seeks support and comfort. And like Arti and I were conversing at the beginning, you know that you are not alone. And as a spirit, I am connected to the 8 billion other beings in the world. And we are all interconnected, and we are all in this together. And I guess COVID has definitely taught us that no one's alone. We are all in this together. And if you do understand and have faith in a higher power, you know that there is this higher support that can allow me to be supported. And that's only one thought away. You know, in my master's research with individuals who are journeying through cancer and terminal illness, I found that those who turned inward in all the adversity, and those who turned to a higher support and to their faith, they were so anchored. And no matter how humongous the challenge may be, with no social support, no respect, their body failing, they still could maintain a power of spirit, because they were not relying on anything or anyone, but a very subtle but powerful higher support. And so, you know, for my mental well-being, can I really understand that as an energetic being, a being that is one of 8 billion beings, you know, there is a higher being I can connect with and draw strength and power from, so that I can rise in all that is happening in my circumstances, so that I can then be of support to others around me. And then when it comes to emotional well-being, how can I stay stable? How can my emotions not fluctuate in all the madness and all the chaos that is happening around me? And definitely a lot is happening, we cannot deny that. And a lot is still going to happen in life. But can I hold firm, you know, to understand that the whole universe is not conspiring against me, but is all for me, and that there is benefit in everything. I just have to be patient and see it. You know, for myself, for the last few years, it's been like a mantra that there is benefit in everything. And if anything happens, I I just remind myself there is benefit in this. I may not see it now, but I will see it soon. And to know that what is in the way is the way. Can I find meaning in it and thrive? I'm just thinking of one of my patients. She was a CEO of a huge company, and at the young age of 40 plus was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And she took those few months that she had and she lived. She found meaning in her life. She flew to wherever she wanted to. She started journaling, had a gratitude journal every morning, every night. And she threw a party, she did a video, and we had deep conversations. And initially, you know, she made me promise that she would not be in any pain, or she would go to Switzerland and go to Dignitas and put an end to it. But she used those months so well that she told me, Raksha, you know, this cancer has been a gift. I have lived life like I have never done and never would have if I was not diagnosed with cancer. And so a beautiful example of, you know, what is in the way is the way. Find meaning in everything that is happening in your life, no matter how challenging it may be. It cannot touch you, the untouchable spirit, and you have everything within you to rise to the occasion. And that circumstance or situation is coming your way because you have the power within. And so to connect with that power and shine through that situation. And so there's many, many more stories, but I think we've come to the end of time. So I'd like to now guide you through a short meditation on this, and then we'll take questions thereafter. So I invite you now to just sit comfortably and relax. And as I'm seated here, I feel a warm wave of peace just flow into this body, pushing all the tiredness, weariness out through the soles of my feet placed gently on the ground. And I scan my whole body, and if any muscle is in tension, I just relax it. I say thank you to every muscle of this body, to every cell of this body. Thank you for an amazing job. Well done. In this moment, I visualize a warm, glowing light in the very center of my forehead, just filling this body with beautiful light and peace. And as the circle of light and peace grows, it encircles my entire body in a bubble of peace. I feel so safe. And all the trillions of cells just drink up this peace. This is who I am. I am the untouchable spirit. A lot may happen in this body, in the world, in relationships. But I am this untouchable energy of peace and light and power and love. And sometimes I feel like the light is almost going out, and then I connect up to a divine light, and draw that current within me. And I trust that there is benefit in everything. In this too, I will find the light, and it will amplify the light that I am. I promise to find meaning and light in everything, in every breath, in every vibration, in every second, so that I stay well. Thank you.
Thank you, Raksha. That was really beautiful. And before anybody asks, I have already asked Raksha to send me some of her meditations, and we will be very happy to share them on YouTube and Facebook with you all. So that's a promise. As soon as we get them, we'll be putting them up. So thank you. Questions have been coming in. Now, to be fair, I will start with the questions that we got right at the beginning of the talk. And I'm not sure if you would recommend that this particular person also check in with a nutritionist or an alternative healer or their doctor, but let me put them to you. Is there value in taking vitamin supplements? We've been told that we shouldn't eat too many. Is that true? And if you have an ailment such as, if you have an ailment, weak wrists or ankles, do I look at vitamin calcium deficiencies or something else? What would you recommend?
So, thank you. You know, in making an assessment of a patient, there's so much that is important, not just the history, but the examination, the blood tests, all of that supports. I myself, being on the front line, I definitely do take vitamins, even though I'm attentive to the food I eat and making sure the energy is high in that. I am aware that we're living in a time where I need to be optimized in my physical health because I am exposed to so much. So I do take vitamins. And what you did suggest about the wrists, it's worth doing your vitamin levels, like your vitamin D levels, to assess that. But as I said, to make contact with your healthcare professional and explore these to give you an answer quickly is not possible. So definitely, pay attention to increasing, sources of nutrition for calcium, etc. And if your levels are low, certain vitamins are supportive. And at this time of COVID in South Africa, we are taking zinc and vitamin C and vitamin D for, the ladies who may need it. And that does support your immunity as well. But many people have different schools of thought, but that is my personal school of thought. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. How can we teach a patient who is dying in palliative care dignity?
Yeah, so that's what I did my master's research on. I did a dignity therapy, and dignity therapy is a beautiful psychotherapy to help them appreciate their amazing life, their high moments in their life, their accomplishments, what they were proud of, how they contributed, in their family, work, social circumstances. And after I interviewed them, I created a legacy document that I handed back to them so that they didn't just live in current moment where their body was failing them, but they could appreciate the rich life that they did live. And feeling then supported by thinking about their intrinsic worth, not based on what others saw them currently like and how they were seeing themselves in current time, they felt really encouraged. I know one of my patients who had nothing, very, very, very little, he said, "I will keep this at my bedside and I would read it every day," because his family was rejecting him. The community couldn't wait to grab all his stuff. But that little legacy supported him. And what supported him further was after I gave him the legacy document, I did a guided meditation or guided imagery on the intrinsic worth of the untouchable spirit. And as I guided him, like I guided you through that meditation at the end, he felt so worthy, you know, and that at one point he said, I feel so well now, I could buy a garage," but it wasn't possible. But you could see that he felt so uplifted, knowing that he was more than his body, more than his social circumstances, more than, you know, the sadness he was feeling at the current time. You know, it supported him. So for me, that is a method that you can help others experience their dignity no matter what. And I continue to do this guided imagery with all my patients. And when I go on leave, they actually wish for them. So I've recorded them so I can share it with them because they really do take a lot of benefit from just experiencing who they are. And it's not about the words, but it's about a guided experience, because we don't believe words, but we believe and we have faith in an experience. So when they touch that experience of who they are through a guided commentary, they then want to taste it more and more. And in that latter 2 weeks of life, when they are semi-comatose, comatose, it's a support for them as they lay in bed, holding on to that awareness. And many individuals, as they move towards that period of transitioning, they have beautiful experiences of peace and love, having shed all these burdens that they battle with up until that moment.
Wow. Thank you. Next question. What advice or support would you give to those suffering from Alzheimer's disease?
Oh, so for me, Alzheimer's disease is not a challenge more for the patient as it is for those that live with them. Because, you know, that soul is in an altered reality, and they can be quite at ease and comfortable in their reality. But those around them, they are the ones that find the difficulty in relating to this being. I know one of my contacts, you know, were also expressing how difficult it is to watch her mother go through Alzheimer's. And I was reminding her that, you know, no matter what her mom is saying or doing, can she connect with her as a subtle being? You know, her mom is still in there. And can she hold that vision of her mom, you know, as this being? And that is what her mom will feel, because all the anxiety and the confusion that she is experiencing is impacting on that mom. And the stress is of no benefit to her or the other. You know, I was just remembering also a patient of mine, you know, who who was having a diagnosis of a terminal illness. And when I went to see her, she said, "I'm coping with my illness, but it's my son. You know, he's not eating." And so I made contact with him, and he did not even want to see me in the home. And so I had to meet him somewhere else. And as I chatted with him and did a guided relaxation with him, he went home, and after 3 days he ate. And the next time I visited the mother, she said, you know, he's changed so much. And that feeling of peace that came to her, knowing that he's now peaceful. And so she had come to balance and could then move on peacefully. And so to understand that we are not separate from each other, the family and the patient is one unit. And so how we feel does affect the one that has the illness. And so pay attention that I can support them and support myself by not just seeing the physical being that is not doing or not remembering or doing things that do not seem sensible, but keep the vision of that eternal, beautiful being that you know and love, and respond to them in that way, and do get help, because it cannot be done alone. You will burn out. So to have aspects in place for physical support, your mental support, have a balance, get out, you know, as well, so that you can support yourself, so that you don't burn out and you can be a healthy support for the loved one. So those are some thoughts.
Thank you. What practice do you have for the habit of tension in the stomach? I am not so comfortable with uncertainty and feel that this contributes to the complications in my body.
So definitely, you know, I don't know if you remember when you were a kid and you had to do an examination or a speech and you would have butterflies in your stomach. And so our gut is the most sensitive organ, and it does experience the stress. And like I said, you know, when we are stressed, the blood supply to our gut is reduced, and then we can get ulcers or gastritis, which is like erosions in our stomach. So to start by learning how to de-stress, and simple methods like some of the three that I shared with you, can you hold more and more the practice that I am a peaceful being? You know, can you even tell yourself 8 times in the day, I'm a peaceful and powerful being, and just feel like a river of peace just flowing to soothe all the muscles in your body and bring them to calm and peace. And so these techniques to relieve the stress, and we have to start to do it. We have to break the cycle, and we can't keep talking about these things, but it's time to do it now. So you, whoever's asked the question, you know, tonight before you sleep, take 10 minutes and just practice this, and then see how it feels. And then tomorrow morning, and whenever you can in the day. And we have to break the cycle of stress and tension. Otherwise, it's going to eat your entire body up with disease after disease, because stress is exacerbating disease and causing disease within your body. And so muscles do tense up when there is the experience of stress. And so like this entire talk has shared, you know, there is an impact of the mind on the body. So pay attention to what is churning out of my mind. And can I be determined every day to do an audit of my mind, do possibly an hourly audit? You know, in the Brahma Kumaris, London has created a lovely app called B-Zone, and it's got a traffic control. So put that button on, and every hour it'll play you a beautiful tune. And as it plays that gentle music, whatever you're doing, If I'm with a patient, I begin to experience myself once again as an energy being. I see them as an energy being. And instead of getting all lost in the tension of the situation, I relax. So every hour on the hour, can you have a reminder to just stop, relax, breathe, and shed wonderful feelings into this body?
Thank you. Next question. You'd mentioned sadness. And is there a way, when there is a wave of sadness experienced, that we can shift that in your experience?
Yes. So it's important to acknowledge the feeling. So for myself, if there's a feeling of sadness, then, and sometimes you're just going in circles with that sadness, I take up a pen and page and just start to write and be very honest with myself and just write and write and write about that sadness. And as one writes, one can then become aware of where it's coming from. And then I also like to sit quietly, and like my many patients in South Africa, you know, that have that are rooted in support from a divine being, I then like to just sit in front of a divine energy and share my heart with that divine energy honestly, so that I don't feel alone in the sadness. And and then slowly but surely, I can see the benefit in that, or I slowly begin to climb out of that darkness. But to be patient with the self, not to be hard on the self, I really feel that the key to enlightenment and a higher experience is being light with the self, not heavy and chastising and always putting the self down and thinking you're not good enough and why are you having such feelings. You know, it is a time when a lot is going to surface within the self, and be patient with yourself. Journal, have a heart to heart with a divine being, and see the light in all the darkness, and focus on that light, and learn and grow, so that you can continue to prosper and see the bigger picture. Because the bigger picture is that there is a world that's steeped in such low feelings. I know in December, South Africa was going through an explosion of deaths, and I felt quite hopeless for a moment. And as I sat in meditation, many beautiful thoughts came, and I thought, if I'm feeling like this, how can I help anyone? And I was determined to rise above that, and to continue to share wonderful energy with the world and with my environments, with the neighborhood, because they need me to dive deep and be a support, even if not physically, but subtly.
We are now over time, so I am going to, there's a few more questions, so I will put them to you, if we can just answer succinctly. Quickly. Yes, okay. Without the story, I guess. Those are really useful. I'm sure you have been asked this question many times. I know that I get asked this question many times, and it's, and I know my patterline, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion on this, because I know within the Brahma Kumaris, we don't tend to take a hard position. We tend to naturally refer to people and their personal experience and respect their opinions. But let me ask you this. This person saying they have many doctors and health authorities trying to get them to take the vaccine for the coronavirus.
Yes.
They don't believe that they should be taking it. They feel their immune system will be able to manage. And from a spiritual point of view, they feel that the vaccine has been developed from fetal cells and so would be unethical. What are your thoughts on this? Do you have an answer?
Well, I've been telling everyone that's not my speciality because I don't see COVID patients. I only see patients with advanced cancer. So I haven't researched it and explored it in depth. So for myself, personally, I've taken the vaccine because all healthcare workers, you know, are advised to take the vaccine. I do meet the I've only been in contact with two COVID patients because my cancer patients take extreme care that they don't contract COVID. So I don't feel I'm the expert on the topic. Mm-hmm. So that's why I don't want to offer, a suggestion. But personally, I've taken it. But I don't know. I know there's so many theories around it, but each one has to make their personal choice. And even the oncologists are telling patients it's your choice. We can't force anyone to take it. And they need to do their research and come to their understanding of what choice they want to make.
Mm, yeah, I think we need to understand our bodies and be self-aware, and then you'll know what you need to do. That's my stance on it very much, I think. And I respect those who've taken it and those who choose not to take it.
Yes.
Everybody will have their own reasoning for it. I don't want it to become something that polarizes me from my friends or family.
Definitely, yes. Yeah. Like we respect people in other parts of their life, I think we should also respect people in their choice with regard to the vaccine. It shouldn't affect our relationships in any way. That's what I feel. So each one should decide for themselves.
Mm-hmm. I hope that helps. You're not sitting on a fence, honestly. It's not sitting on the fence. It's just knowing what you need to do and trusting yourself and moving on from there. Do you think that most societies encourage stress and anxiety through work and especially media? If so, is it possible to exist in this society but block it out?
So is it possible to block out stress? I think we have to explore ourselves deeply because we can move towards stress in all parts of our life, and you were saying work as well. So for me, work should be something you love. And it can be something you love if you begin to look at, why am I here really, and put that wonderful intention out. Like, I'd been working in the field of medicine for more than a decade, and then I found palliative medicine. But it was because I looked at who am I and why am I here, and as I explored that, naturally I fell into the space where I could live my purpose. And then in palliative medicine now, at a time I may be taking care of 40 patients with advanced cancer in crisis, with many relatives phoning me and many patients calling. And that also can create a feeling of stress. But then again, I have to look at my life once again and choose to prioritize, choose how I respond to every scene as I answer every WhatsApp or every call or in my every interaction. Am I doing it as a physical being lost in the action, or am I taking it as an opportunity to meet another beautiful person and support someone, uplift them, make a difference, surround them with good feelings. So can I stay true to who I am and why I am here in everything I do? And that is to live from inside out, and that is well-being from inside out. And so no matter what I do, it's not what I'm doing, but how I'm doing it. And if I'm living my purpose, then I'm living life, you know. So for me, can I live life, every second of it? It's precious and beautiful, and live it from inside out, totally well from inside, because I know who I am and why I'm here. And I've got great support, even if it's not physical.
Okay, this is really the last question. This person is saying they love this concept of the untouchable spirit. Can you very quickly tell them how to separate themselves, their untouchable spirit, from their emotions?
Oh, yeah. So for me, I like to visualize the untouchable spirit as a being of light energy, like a star in the sky, you know, this beautiful light. And then the emotions, I like to see the emotions as a drama in front of me. So I, this untouchable spirit, I'm watching the feelings of sadness, anger, irritation, joy, love, all these fluctuating emotions, but from a safe space of the untouchable spirit. And then I don't get swept away in the waves of the emotions, but I can stay anchored in that safety and that trip. I don't, you know, get swept away in the depression or whatever feelings that may come. So that's one practice that could help.
Thank you.